As we welcome you back to the Two Guys Named Chris show, we welcome in Lisa Lanier. She's our official attorney of this program. LanierLawGroup.com is the website, or HireAHeavyweight.com. She's president there. Joins us every week at this time to go inside several legal cases. One of them, in fact, we'll start with one that involves the hurricane and the hurricane aftermath in western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee. And Lisa has a special announcement, too. She's heading up a lot of hurricane relief. We wanted to make sure we got that out there early. Lisa, good morning. And what are you doing with that? How can people give?
Hey, good morning. I almost burped when I said, sorry about that.
It's all right.
Sorry. I almost got a belch out of me first thing this morning. I just chugged a Waterloo.
When we're all AI, Lisa, that won't happen.
Exactly, Lisa. When you're not a real person, you'll never belch on the air like that. We know what that's like.
I belched on the air.
Yeah.
You know, I know you like the Spindrift. Have you tried the Waterloo?
No, is that good, too? I do like Spindrift.
It's really good. Yeah, that's why I was chugging a Waterloo right before I got on with you, and it got out. You know, you get one of those carbonation bubbles. It was there. It was real.
Yes.
Okay.
That's not one of the alcoholic ones, is it?
Are you?
No, you're not drinking. No.
A little early morning party.
No.
It is fry egg.
This is a blackberry lemonade, strictly. Okay.
All right.
Zero sugar.
She's Waterlooing. We got a Waterloo out of her.
This woman. You know, I got a Waterloo whoop out of me.
Yes.
So hurricane relief, yes. Very serious. So I'm collecting relief supplies. So if anybody wants to donate, any of our offices all over North Carolina, probably the most known to listeners, the Greensboro Triad office out by the airport, 6518 Airport Center Drive. If you have supplies that you want to get up there, we have tomorrow 3 box trucks full of supplies. We're coordinating with other relief volunteers. And we're also doing, if you want to, I know a lot of people are impacted by this that are in the listening area, and if they need help with insurance claims or with FEMA forms, we're holding free legal clinics for folks to help navigate that. I just talked to some great people in the little town of Todd last night and yesterday, and they are terribly impacted by this. And little towns like that are not getting the relief that Boone and Lake Lure and Asheville are getting. And so I just would love to have all the support and help that we can get, because it's much worse than people realize, I think.
I agree.
And
that's a great thing you're doing. I love the free legal aid that you're giving out like that, because people will need that as they navigate through. And it'll take years, to rebuild. I saw the mayor of Asheville on last night. And she's like, this is 10 years, to rebuild this town.
Yeah.
It's been awful. It's been awful. I'm glad you said that. And thank you for doing that, of course. This story that we do in Lawyer Up here involves the plastics company. You may have heard about this in East Tennessee. A plastics factory there, Unicoi County, is getting a lot of pushback and a lot of criticism. Some employees say they were trapped at the plastics factory and not allowed to go home, even though they were close to a river water source, and obviously flooding was coming and the waters were rising. And now they have people missing and dead because they were forced to stay in this plastics factory. However, the owners and the folks in charge there say no one was ever told they had to stay. Now, this is going to be a long legal fight, I'm sure. Are they going to win this? The employees, this is a terrible, terrible tragedy, because the people who work there say, if we were allowed to go home, we wouldn't have had this loss of life. What are your thoughts on it, Lisa?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of people, because there were survivors, too. I think there were, 11 dead, but there were also a bunch of survivors.
Yeah.
And they're all pretty much saying, like, hey, we were told we could not leave. And they were still being told this. What an account I heard was that they were still being told this even when the water was, like, waist high in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad.
Right.
And, then when they finally told them that they could go, it was too late, and they were, a bunch of them piled onto this really huge truck that they thought had, a higher profile, and it ended up getting capsized, and it was horrific. So this is so bad that there's an investigation now by the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, so their state FBI sort of thing, and they're OSHA, and they're investigating for possible fines and criminal charges. So it's real. I mean, and I think it's bad.
Yeah, but do they have? If the company says, well, we told you could go home, and they said, no, you didn't, is there anything except, like, your word versus mine? Can they prove that they were told they couldn't leave?
Well, I mean, if you've got 20 employees, all saying, they told us we couldn't leave, I think that's going to carry the day just from, but that's going to be a question for the trier of fact, if it's a jury or judge. But here, I think, it seems it seems like, you know, what do you think happened? You know, these people
would naturally
want to leave, right, when they see water's waist high in the parking lot.
So, of course.
And, you know, we've seen other bad situations. You know, years ago in North Carolina, there was a thing where that chicken plant, you know, where they didn't let the employees leave the building during breaks, and they actually locked the doors and barricaded the doors so that people couldn't leave for a break. And it ended up catching fire, and a bunch of people died. I mean, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, the better policy. What my policy is, because we have offices all over North Carolina. I tell people, use your judgment. You know, and if you don't think it's safe to come to work because of weather conditions, or you're at work and it's getting unsafe, then go. You know, I mean, you don't want to keep people when they feel, because everybody lives in different types of places. You know, you might all work in the same office, and one person lives up a mountain, and the other one lives in the valley or whatever. You know, you just have to let people use their judgment.
Let's address the elephant in the room.
Chris Kelly is dying to object. He knows everything you're saying is correct, Lisa, but...
And Lisa, he is a boss who has forced an employee to stay.
Biggie, okay.
With a life-threatening condition.
Full disclosure. Biggie had a volleyball-size abscess up his butt 3 years ago. Chris Dim wasn't here. We had 15 minutes left in the show. Biggie was laying on a bench and perspiring
profusely
from a huge fever.
My fever was 103.5.
And Biggie said, "Can I leave?" And I said, "No, you may not."
Got a segment and a half to go.
Oh, my goodness.
There's 20 minutes left.
Now you carry on your vacation days.
I tapped my watch and said, nope, Big Hand's not on the 12 yet, is it?
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Now
he's also. It would have been on you.
It would have been. Yeah. It would have. A doctor actually emailed and said, "Let him go." I said, "I don't think so."
He also still believes when there's life-threatening weather conditions that we are the first thing.
That's right.
That people go to.
That's right. Yes. When the roads are full of snow, I make Biggie come in anyway.
We're the lifeline.
We're the lifeline.
You're like first
people
responders.
Need us.
Yeah. We're the first responders. We have to be here. Exactly. So, yes, and I'm the same person who, when I had COVID, said I would come in to this studio, do the show, but hold my breath in the lobby.
I wouldn't breathe around anybody.
Yeah.
These are my policies. These are my policies only. Exactly.
You haven't taken a life
yet. Not yet. So far, everything has been okay here. Biggie made it to the hospital miraculously.
How long was he in the hospital that time?
24 days.
Oh, my goodness. Probably 22 of those because you made him suffer
probably.
Through that.
They
know?
Said,
no doubt.
If you'd only gotten here a half hour earlier,
if only.
We could have saved you.
From
Florida, a woman, and I remember this story, she and her boyfriend, her name is Sarah Boone, were playing a titillating game of hide-and-go-seek, so she said. It was a game where one would hide from the other and ended in sexual gratification. Well, that was really not true, because what happened was the boyfriend hid in a suitcase and she forced him to stay in there, at least according to all the documentation now. And he wound up dying, had a very bizarre death. Jorge Torres in Winter Park, Florida, inside an apartment as they were playing this sexual hide and seek. Now the woman is getting ready to go on trial, but she said, "My appearance is terrible. I need the court to pay for a hairdresser to come in here and get a little makeover."
Ooh, ballsy.
Yeah, big time.
Audacity.
What kind of request is this? Her makeup done and her hair done, because she can't appear in front of a jury like this. Your thoughts, Lisa?
Yeah, so the judge has denied this, I think, very recently, like maybe yesterday. And then what the judge said is that, so not only will they not hire a makeup and hairstylist, but her lawyer cannot even bring her makeup products because it's considered contraband in their system. And so, you know, there's a kind of a long history of jurisprudence around that, you know, the defendant can look presentable. And so, like, you know, when they try to have them come in, like, you know, make them wear an orange jumpsuit or something, they have a right to not look like a convicted criminal. You know, they have a right to look like wear normal clothes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But but it's never been determined that they have to have a beauty consultant or makeup or anything like that. So,
yeah,
and she's losing. And it's a fascinating case. She actually, she videotaped him in the suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a link to it that's from X, but so I don't know if people can open it, or they may have to put it in your browser. Mm. But it is wild, because you can hear him in there going, "Sarah, I can't effing breathe."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she's just laughing and saying, that's my name, don't wear it out, and crazy stuff like that. I mean, just, it was so awful. And mm-hmm. she's in the, and this is all being televised on Court TV, I think. So mm-hmm. you can watch it, you can YouTube it.
My wife will be on this. Yeah. My wife will be all over this. Yeah.
So the facts of this case are not in dispute. He physically chose to get in the suitcase.
He did, yeah.
She didn't kill him and then put him in there.
I think they were legit playing a game. They were drunk. And yeah. I think they were, and she's claiming spousal abuse and that this was just her, you know, her, she snapped and got mm-hmm. back at him or whatever. But I think he got in a suitcase to hide. And then I think she came along and went, here's my chance. And she zipped it up.
Yeah, she did. He was in the suitcase hiding.
Yeah.
That's drunken play. I can see it.
I feel like, do you think she's going to get a lesser sentence than murder? Because that's what.
She didn't mean to kill
him. She didn't mean to, right? Manslaughter?
I don't know. When you see the video and he's in there saying he can't breathe, and then she goes to bed.
Yeah.
And, she claims it was because he was drunk, that she was drunk, that she wasn't, in her right mind or whatever,
yeah.
That's not exculpatory, but it can mitigate intent mm-hmm. To like a more of like a reckless. So, I mean, they may give her more like a manslaughter or second degree kind of thing out of it. But yeah, it's pretty egregious when you see the video. And she's just laughing at him.
Adult hide and seek.
Yeah. So he's hollering if she couldn't hear him over her electric toothbrush.
Correct. She's
right.
Brushing her teeth. Right. Let me ask you this, Lisa, about appearance in the courtroom, because she wanted a makeover artist to come in and give her a
glow up.
Make a glow up. I was watching that Menendez trial show on Netflix, which I highly recommend.
The scripted show.
I'm watching it, too. I'm watching it right now, too.
Great show. Two things I wanted to ask you about. First, their lawyer told them, wear pastels, like pastel sweaters in court. It plays better to the jury. And secondly, this was amazing to me. The first trial ended in a mistrial. I believe 8 or 9 people had voted to acquit, and two or three voted to convict, and so they were hopelessly deadlocked, and there was a hung jury, and so they were going to try them again. And the lawyer for the Menendez brothers had all of the jurors that had voted to acquit over to her house and asked them, why, what did I do that got through to you, and what did the folks who voted to convict, what did they not like? I didn't realize lawyers could do that. You're allowed to talk to the first jury. That's amazing.
Absolutely. And normally you don't have them over to your house. That's a little extreme.
Well, it may have been her office. It looked like her house. It may have been her office.
Yeah. But I mean, it happens. And for sure, I mean, like I always go try to talk to the jury afterward. And regardless of the verdict, I want to know like what worked, what didn't work, mm-hmm. because juries are complex and unpredictable. And you always want to poll the jury afterward, just get their opinions about how, what played well to them and that sort of thing. But yeah, so it's very normal.
Well,
you know what I want to know? Do you think the dad really did all that weird sex stuff to them?
They're getting ready to get a new hearing. They just announced today. It is so up in the air for me. If you haven't seen the last episode of that show, that's the second trial, and the prosecuting attorney eviscerates them. And by the time it was over, I thought, no, these are just horrible children, or adults at that time, but horrible kids who killed their parents for money. But that being said, I do think they at the very least had verbal abuse heaped on them. But see, what's getting him a new trial maybe is that a kid has come forward from Menudo, and the dad worked in the record industry with Menudo, and he says when he was very young, the dad sexually molested him. And so now they're saying maybe the Menendez brothers were telling the truth and they might get new hearing out of this whole thing. It's unbelievable. By the way, Lisa, this is a little bit of a spoiler if you hadn't gotten to this episode, but when the woman, and I want to know if you've ever had this happen to you, when the woman who represented them had the jury to her office or to her house and said what got through to you but didn't, to the folks who wanted to convict, one of the women said, listen, I hate to admit this, but the guys who wanted to convict the Menendez brothers, they didn't like you, meaning the lawyer. They thought you were too full of yourself. Have you ever heard anybody say, that's tough for your ego, I would imagine.
Oh, I've, of course, never had it personally said about me.
I didn't think so. I felt bad for the woman. I mean, it's like, holy cow, how dare you? Now, she was.
But yeah, for sure. The way the jury perceives the attorney definitely has an impact on the case.
Definitely. So I think she was considering softening her stance the next time around for the second trial. But it's a fascinating show and how they got convicted
really
and everything. Another case here for Lisa Lanier, lawyer up. An Oregon amusement park has filed a lawsuit against a ride manufacturer. Guests were left hanging upside down for about a half hour in June. And so they're all upset, of course. The guests were upset, naturally, at least 30 people hanging upside down from this ride. So the amusement park is blaming the ride manufacturer, and they're filing the lawsuit. Does this happen a lot, Lisa? And do you think they'll be successful?
Yeah, and it's and what's actually happened here is that the amusement park has already been sued, and they're just trying to shift that blame and say, hey, wait, you know, it wasn't us, it was the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Because I think when the people who the riders sued, they did not include the manufacturer. And so they're just bringing them in to try to shift the blame to the manufacturer.
Who is ultimately to blame? Do you think it's the manufacturer or the amusement park itself?
Well, they can both, you know, they can both be held. So in products liability law, both anybody in the sort of the chain of the sale from manufacturer to sale can be held liable for it. But here, I think, you know, they're looking to get indemnification from the manufacturer. So they're trying to shift all of it to the manufacturer. We'll see how it plays out. I don't know, you know, and it was the first day of the opening of the park for the season. And a lot of these people were fairly young. I mean, even though, you know, I think there were some like, you know, young teens, 10, 12 years old, even as young as that. And they say that these kids were really traumatized from it and thought they were going to die. And, you know, 30 minutes is a long time to hang upside down.
Oh, no kidding.
And, especially, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. But here they say that, you know, could it be, and this is what, you know, the manufacturer's going to say, could it be, you know, your maintenance, your, you know, your startup, you didn't fully test it, you know, all that sort of thing. So it's just going to come down to a question of fact.
All right.
I can't prove this. This would only be considered hearsay in a court of law that Lisa would clearly move to strike. But it seems to me that whenever a ride malfunctions at a park, any park, county fair, Disney World, Busch Gardens, it's always upside down. They're always hanging upside down.
Why does it ever just get stuck?
It never just gets stuck on the way up.
Right. It's if you're upside
down. It's always upside down.
Or maybe you just don't hear about those because it's like big deal. Right.
Maybe. Okay. It's a better picture.
That's what scares my daughter to death when because there are stairs that let you walk down. And she's like, if we ever get stuck, I'm going to be so scared walking down those stairs.
Oh, yeah. It's not down the roller coaster?
Yeah. It's not the ride that scares her. It's the possibility that she'll have to walk down the stairs. Speaking of teens traumatized, the family of a Michigan teenager who was shamed by a judge, the class, you've probably heard about this, of a 15-year-old girl, they were basically on a, it seemed like a field trip to a judge's courtroom. A 15-year-old girl fell asleep while she was in the courtroom. The judge not only told her to wake up, but put her in handcuffs, wound up putting her in jail for at least a little while. And now her family is saying there's trauma from this. The judge has been sitting down to traffic court, and they're suing. The question is, will they be successful in their lawsuit? Was there enough damage done here, mental anguishes and so forth, even though she's physically fine because she was thrown into jail for a bit? What do you think, Lisa? Is this judge going to be in serious trouble and they're going to have a payout here for this teenager's family?
Yeah, I think so. It went really, really far. I mean, this kid, you know, first of all, was not a criminal or anything, not under at all the authority of the court other than she was on like a field trip to observe court that day. And her family said that they'd been going through a lot, that they had been displaced from their home and had just moved overnight into a new place. And she didn't get a lot of sleep. And so she just was dozing off. And that's all she was doing. She wasn't doing anything disruptive. She was dozing off. And the judge admonished her for dozing off one time. And she apologized. And she said, I'm sorry, you know, I'm really tired. And then she dozed off again a little while later. And the judge just freaked. And so he had her, you know, hauled out in handcuffs. He had her locked in a prison cell for, I think it was 5 or 6 hours. And then he put her on trial. So he actually held a mock trial. And her peers, which is even worse, got to try her. And so her classmates, you know, so it put her in this awful situation of being ridiculed.
Yeah.
And he was way. So he's lost his job teaching at the local college. He taught some classes at a law school nearby, I think, and he's been demoted. I think he may face worse than demotion. And then now this lawsuit. And I think he just was way, way, way out of line.
That's overreach. It's wrong. I'll tell you, I told Biggie this. If that had happened to me when I was 15, I don't know how my mother would have reacted. My father would have said, stay awake next time. I mean, he really would have. That's what he would have said.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, when you hear more and more about what the judge did, it is too far. I mean, he should never have taken that. He could have made
That's what the Menendez dad would have said, too, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
You know how he was on those boys?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, yes, the Menendez guy on those boys. That's right. Listen, woe be unto you if you're a Menendez and you miss a tennis shot. He'd get up and say,
oh, jeez, yeah.
Loser?
Nice.
Effing loser? Lisa Lanier, our official attorney of the Two Guys Named Chris show, available at lanierlawgroup.com, hireaheavyweight.com. She's president there. And good luck, Lisa. Thank you for sharing about how you're helping those who have been affected, impacted so horribly by the hurricane. Great to hear from you, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Don't let that son of yours watch that Menendez show.
Oh, God. No kidding. Don't get any idea. You too.